Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
This is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm really good.
Yeah, why?
We're in London.
And we are in London.
I haven't been in London in ages.
Where have you been, Rob?
I've been in, guess where? Shall we call your agent in LA and tell him? Because yes. He doesn't like me talking about this topic. It begins with an M.
Massachusetts.
Margate. Margate. I just thought I wouldn't even let you guess.
No,
what's there to guess? I've been doing yoga.
You just started yoga, though, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Is it yoga Ashtanga?
I did Ashtanga.
Oh, how was
well,
that?
Well, no, I started with Vinyasa, and then I went into Ashtanga, and I almost didn't do Ashtanga because I thought it was meant to be really difficult. And all that comes to my mind is Madonna in Ray of Light looking incredible and, like, Earth Mother and, like, changing the world doing
you
Ashtanga.
You're not gay, are you?
No, never. doing Ashtanga yoga. So I was a bit terrified, to be honest, but because I haven't done any ballet or anything since I was about 5, 6, 7 years old. I used to do ballet when I was a kid.
So you think the ballet is related to yoga?
Totally. It totally brought it all back to me. I had quite a lot of childhood memories. It was intense. Anyway, I now love yoga. I'm feeling really chill and really happy. And when I come to London, I'm like totally excited because London's great. Yeah, but I don't live here much anymore. So it
feels like you're visiting as a tourist.
So today's guest,
yes,
we are very excited about, because part of the reason we did Talk Art was about letting people discover new artists and also new ideas and new ways of thinking.
Yeah.
And the exhibition at the Chisenhill right now, I think, is one of the most important shows that has been on in the UK in a long, long time.
Yeah,
and there's one particular work in the show which I think is going to go on to be quite seminal. The artist is actually quite embarrassed right now. She's never really hung out with me or Russ, so I don't think she understands our level of enthusiasm.
WTF, yes.
But yeah, I'm incredibly touched by this work on so many levels, which we will discuss.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
She currently has a show at the Chisenhill, which is in East London, and is a great space for bringing new artists to
emerging,
all of our attention. And you went last week.
I went last week, yes, and it's phenomenal, and this is incredibly exciting. We're also here to talk about this work for Hunger Magazine, who we're doing a collaboration with, talking about sound art. And this artist works in sound art as a priority.
And also many other mediums as well, and they are all interlinked, which we will learn now. But we would like to welcome to Talk Art, Emma Abassi-Okon.
Hi.
Hi.
How was that intro?
Yeah, it was fine. It was a bit much, but it's
fine. I am a bit much.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So how did you start making work, like, in the early days? Did you study art from a young age?
No, I studied design, actually. Oh. I studied design via illustration and came through that way. And I just really liked the print room, actually. So I came through, like, printmaking, doing massive screen prints.
Wow.
I really loved the process of it. I liked the idea of, like, going home when you were physically tired from engaging in this kind of, like, physical work. And then also,
what do you mean, screen prints, and, like, dragging the
basically
dragging
it, yeah.
right
and then cardio. also there were, like, things about that process where you can kind of explore the different variables. So basically how you expose your screen affected what the image would look like, how you mix the ink, and I was just really into all of those kind of different things that you can kind of, like, exploit, basically, which will yield different versions of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of didn't have any place at the time, I guess, for a traditional kind of graphic design practice. And also, I was really greedy. I didn't really like making work for anyone else. And then I went on to do an MA because I was a bit like, oh, what do I do with this? And then through the MA, I kind of started to think about, like, what is this kind of, like, what is this that I'm doing? And decided to kind of like, okay, I can sidestep and kind of like maybe the context that maybe seems more appropriate is maybe an art context for what I'm doing, and then start to kind of like maybe think through that and try to apply through opportunities for that. Basically.
Wow. What was your imagery you went for in the screen printing?
So it used to be like very formal, very abstract, geometric. So again, no figures, playing around with like lots of light, lots of colour, lots of different layers, some typographical elements, basically.
And do you feel like that's a period now that you've moved on from, or do you revisit that, do you think?
No, I really like, I still make prints. Like,
do you?
Yeah,
do you?
Totally, cool. Totally. I love it. Like, it's very much, like the rhythm, the grammar of it is very much shows up, maybe not explicitly, yeah, but it's very much in the work that I'm doing.
So can we talk about rhythm?
Yeah.
I think a really interesting thing that I first noticed before I actually saw your work is...
We've got to say, by the way, that the little noises you can hear are scuffling around the floor is I've got two basset hounds in my apartment that are shuffling around.
They're not mine.
They're not... Emma didn't
they're
turn up
mine.
With her
no,
two bassets.
No, I did not.
No, and one of them's a pup and he's snuffling around at the minute, so apologies for that.
So one of the things I noticed immediately, which initially I think kind of jolted me, were the titles of your works, but also the title of your exhibition at the Chisenhale,
yeah,
which uses really unusual syntax and grammar,
yeah,
and also unusual words, which interestingly, I didn't even know one of these words, which we can talk about in a second.
Okay.
But how does that part of your work function, and why is that so important?
In a way, they're a format for me to kind of like throw in everything that I'm thinking about when I'm making the work and to kind of cover all the areas that may be not explicit, maybe that won't be so kind of like easy digestible or palpable when you visit the show. So, and also there's this other thing where I don't want to just give it away. I want also like the audience or whoever's kind of engaged in the work to kind of like sit and study with me. Mm-hmm. And so... It's almost like the more you spend with it, the more it will reveal. So you could actually just take that title and every single word, just do a Google search, and that will just kind of reveal more things about maybe what that work
it's
is trying to do.
It's like Sudoku type, cryptic.
Yeah, I mean, I've never played Sudoku.
Right, okay.
But like, yeah, I'm going to just agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
But almost just like a gift that keeps on giving, it just kind of constantly reveals and kind of constantly kind of like create digs for like other information that's not so like explicit in that show.
So do you feel like an obvious title can take away from the work for you? You think the titles need to be something that can be worked at as well?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with like obvious titles. I would challenge you, like, what is an obvious title?
Uh-huh.
But for me, it's also, again, in a way, like a prophecy. It becomes a spell in terms of like all the things that I also want this work to be able to do as well, all mm-hmm. the things that I desire this work to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can kind of like name that and put that in there, there is a part of me that absolutely believes that it will achieve that. So it's almost like you naming like a kid, like you wait for the kid to be born and feel like, oh, there's Joe or there's Joseph or there's like Mary. In a way, it's like, I want this to be this thing. I want this work to do all these other things that I'm really interested in.
Do you have the title before you make the work?
No, I have to see the work first.
Uh-huh.
Basically. So there was this kind of delay in terms of like, Emma, what's the title? I'm like, I've got to wait a bit. I need a bit more time.
The Chisenhale's in panicking because they're trying to do all their
paperwork. No, they were really good, actually.
Right.
Ellie was amazing. She was really good and kind of like just walked with me through it, basically. I was just like, don't worry, take your time. So that's important. Like, I kind of have to see it. And I have to see it outside of my head or like see like taking up space and what that space looks like before I can kind of say, like, this is what it is, or this is what I want from it, actually. And sometimes what I want from it isn't necessarily what it's doing in that space at that time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So it still has the potential to transform or evolve.
Yeah,
As it exists.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it will do anyway.
I hope so.
The world will change as well around it.
So I hope so,
it
yes.
might have different meanings as it goes yeah. forward. And it's quite interesting for me, because when I first saw... So your title of your show in London is Infinite Slippage, Non-Repugnant Insolvencies, and then it has the word tarrying,
yeah.
but it's broken up with lots of different punctuation.
Exclamation marks. After each letter.
Yeah, and we can put this on our Instagram. As hands clap of M's hard, loved flesh, I'm irreducibly undone because... quantum lineage complex dub. And there's punctuation throughout that.
Yeah.
But when I first read it, I was initially like, what is that? To be totally honest, I was like, what a crazy title. And then the more I read it, I realized it was slowing me down. And it was immediately, just from that one title, it was making me think. And instead of it being, I obviously also thought that you'd chosen to title it for a reason. Do you know what I mean? So there is an element of trying to crack a code or trying to work out what it is you're trying to communicate. And obviously that isn't always immediate or as direct as that in art or in the world. You know, you can't just be given something straight away. But what I liked about it was that as I actually read it out loud, and the punctuation did slow me down.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in this idea of slowing things down, which is what I've taken away from the show, I think.
Yeah. And the word of that.
Yeah, and the word that I hadn't heard before was tarrying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I love that word.
Yeah.
And have you always been interested in that as a word, or did you?
Yeah, so like not always, but it was like a gesture that I'm familiar with. So for instance, like in the church I go to, like to tarry is it's almost like a form of prayer where you're kind of like waiting, like you're waiting for an answer, like you're like it's almost like when everything's kind of like your very last kind of like there's nothing else that can be done. It's like, I'm so desperate. Like, I'm going to wait for this. Like, I'm not going to move. I'm going to kind of like demand this kind of thing that I need. But then also there's a tarrying in terms of like tardiness, kind of also that I see as to be slow as well, to kind of wait, to kind of delay something. So I was just interested in all of those different things. And again, I like taking particular words and kind of really kind of pushing like, what do they mean? Like, so they can mean different things in different contexts, basically. So yes, I'm interested in tarrying. I'm interested in this idea of like delaying an answer or delaying.
Well, you said in the interview it's an intended dwelling on something or the waiting for something to arrive. So it's that pause, which when I went to see your all right, Cooper, he was pausing, he's tarrying. When I went to see your show, I was in there for like 35 minutes, 40 minutes, and you can't not stop and wait for what's happening with the fans and with the music, and you are waiting for something to arrive, but also you're watching it happen. So it's complete that tarrying, just like that makes sense completely.
Yeah.
And you reference like a philosopher that says, in itself, not doing anything is an action because something will always happen. So you're allowing that other thing to happen if you don't take any action.
And you can't predetermine what that is.
No.
You know, and that's the other thing what I'm interested in terms of like, what is going to, like, the thing that's supposed to happen will happen. You know, like, I don't believe in coincidence, but like, I do believe in this idea of magic.
Is it fatalistic?
I do believe in like, in faith and like, in fate and like, this thing that's supposed to happen will happen, basically.
Right.
Like, again, just even if you take away like the idea of like faith from any kind of deity, it's like the more, like, for instance, you get up this morning or you go to bed last night to say, I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah.
That's a form of faith. Like, you are practicing a form of faith that I'm going to actually wake up and see you in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And I'm interested in that. And I'm interested in terms of like what that does kinetically on you, like physically, mentally and emotionally, basically, to like kind of, and that's almost a spell. In a way to say, I'll see you in the morning, even though tomorrow hasn't come yet, right? And I'm interested in like what happens in that space.
It's hope. Hope is a big thing for you. That you treat hope as an actual mechanism, as something that you can play with.
A technology. Yeah,
hope
totally.
Is a technology for you.
Yeah, like I see it as like, and I think I said this in the interview in terms of like, it makes the invisible real. It gives like material to something that's invisible or that's yet to happen. And so again, if you want to kind of place it in our current kind of political climate, I think hope is really important because we are very hopeful for things that have yet to happen that we want to happen, right?
Yeah.
So we can scale that up. Like it could be like really on a micro, mm-hmm. micro personal level, or you can scale that up and it's on like a global level in terms of like, actually, what are the things that we need to see happening? And so how do we activate this technology? Like, we've kind of like instrumentalized lots of different technologies. How do we kind of take this technology of hope and use that to kind of bring down the things that we want to happen? So there's like, it's like, I'm interested in that basically.
Yes.
In moving through those different kind of like,
I like you
poles.
Considering it as a technology. Is it something that's palpable, something that's like tangible that you can
right?
work with? Yeah, amazing.
Something that I've been thinking a lot about, especially since we've started doing these interviews in the last kind of 6 months, has been the idea that art has the power to change lives and to bring hope to people, and also to bring people together.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that we need more than ever than before, because I feel like the world's becoming so more individualistic and separate or whatever.
Yeah.
So somehow art can bring us all together.
Yeah.
And your exhibition to me really is about that. And I don't know whether that's intentional or not, but that's what I took away from it,
yeah.
was this idea of people slowing down and actually somehow having hope again and yeah. trying to make the world better somehow.
Yeah.
Even though that might sound a bit utopian or something, but I did feel this incredible power from it. And I think a lot of it was through the visual of the fans moving
mm.
with the sound,
yeah.
but also combined with the whole installation that you've created.
And the space. Yeah.
And then the more you read about the show, all the little details, like the hidden gel, you know, that's yeah. on the
yeah.
the ceiling.
So you yeah. prep, you what you needed to prep the space before you went in. So about
yeah,
your time
amazing.
Was that you felt like for you to occupy that space, you needed it to feel like you'd claimed it.
Yeah.
So you'd made this human element with these liquids. So it's gel that you use when you're pregnant to check, what's that called?
Yeah, ultrasound gel.
Ultrasound
so it's
gel.
Like a mixture of ultrasound gel, morphine, insulin. And then in that mixture was like gold, which was just kind of like dunked in there, soaking in
it. It was your mum's jewellery or something?
It was my mum's jewellery, yes,
yeah.
basically.
But the jewellery isn't
no,
somewhere
hell,
to be
no.
found. Okay, but it was just...
It's almost like an invisible layer,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
And, it's on the ceiling above you.
Yeah.
So as you're walking in, you might not even realise it's there.
The top of the gallery ceiling, or ceiling you created, the
no,
full
the ceiling.
Ceiling
I created.
Right, right, right.
So basically each and every one of those tiles, is like there's a layer of this mixture that's been kind of like wiped
wow.
over it.
And that could just be for you, but you want the audience to know that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely for me. Like, that is done as a gesture for myself. But also, like, that's written as a material. So when you read it, you're like, okay, what does that do? So yeah. almost in a way, like, what are these materials, like, rendering to this kind of mass-produced object?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of effect do they have? Like, we understand what effect that they have on a body,
mm.
on a physical body. What potential effect could they have on something that's mass-produced, basically?
This is the full ceiling we're talking about,
ceiling.
Which
yeah,
is,
so
like, what you get in offices and schools. It's,
yeah.
it's when you have the square panels that are all pieced together, which kind of hide above them all the kind of wires and the
yeah.
ducts and everything.
And you've installed that into the gallery space
yeah.
and there's actually a gap in between that and the existing ceiling.
Absolutely.
Which
yeah.
is also very important in the exhibition,
yeah.
which you can talk about in a minute. But
do you always prepare a space? Is this your thing? Do you like, before you enter, like a... it's like a blessing, I guess, in some
yeah,
ways, isn't
it? Yeah, you can
it?
Say like it's some kind of like I go in and I like kind of like get rid of all like... the,
sage it.
Totally.
Yeah. Is it always this mixture?
So this mixture has turned up in different ways, but it hasn't necessarily been applied to like the walls or like an infrastructure in the show. Normally they've been contained in like in plastic bags that I've made. So this is the first time I've used it outside of that. And so actually maybe a detail is that the work, that wasn't always going to be the work. I was going to make these kind of life-size 2 meters by 2 meter, almost like bags that had this mixture in it with like a pump. But that cost too much to make and I wasn't interested in spending that.
What do you
that.
Mean though? Like how many bags?
So like there'll be one bag and it'll probably be like a bit taller than you.
Yeah.
2 meters wide.
Clear.
Clear. Yeah. And it would have this solution in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it looked like a big intravenous drip, but
absolutely,
a big version.
Absolutely. And,
well,
be like
it would
a
always
pump.
Be circulating.
No, it'll be stationary and there'll just be like a pump where you could like literally like pump it out basically.
Wow.
Oh, I see. Like,
yeah.
like you would pump
like,
hand
you know,
wash
like,
out of
yeah,
the thing or something.
Totally, yeah.
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 Well,
yeah.
and you could then have that for yourself? Or
I hadn't decided whether I'd wanted
okay.
people to do that. But
then
this,
but this
the
will
gold.
Turn up at some other point in your work.
I don't know because to make that on its own is like just a certain amount of money that I wouldn't necessarily pay to kind of make an artwork.
Yeah, got it.
Basically. Right. I don't need to
the
see that.
The fabrication costs
yeah,
outweigh.
Yeah, I'm not
yeah,
invested in that, basically.
At the moment. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I don't see the need to kind of do that, to
right.
put that money down for this thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. yeah.
I can enjoy it like...
It's enough as an idea.
Basically,
yes.
right?
And also that idea has led to another work anyway.
Absolutely.
And it still exists because
yes.
it's an idea and that's
yeah.
real. Yeah,
totally.
Interesting.
Well, so the main element of the show is that you walk in and there are 11
yeah.
industrial... air conditioner fans that have all got had their motors removed and all that's left is the fan
yeah.
and they're affixed to the wall and behind six of them there's speakers.
So inside them
inside
there's speakers,
them
yeah.
inside them there's
yeah.
speakers
and the motors have been left in, so it's all the gas cylinders, all that's been gutted out
right
basically.
right.
So it's just a shell, so it's just the motor and the wire that kind of like allows the motors to kind of be powered.
And then you set up a program system so the fans operate at different times, and throughout there is a music sequence by an artist called Miguel,
yeah.
and the song's called...
Adorn.
Yeah. Adorn. But it's really slowed down. Yeah. So it has this kind of, to me, it had a really filmic, dystopian, very immersive, atmospheric vibe. And I love that. And then you get the wind coming from different angles. Yeah. I didn't know what to expect. And it was just so compelling. And you're so in it. It's amazing. And people were really slow in there. People were really tarrying in there.
That's good to know. Yeah. That's good to know.
How did you come to that idea with these industrial fans?
So in the show in New Art Exchange, I had used like an air vent before.
Right. Oh, yes.
And
I saw that.
And so that's kind of like a continuation of that work. And it comes back. This is like where the screen printing turns up. Like I'm interested in maybe like materials that have like variables that can be explored or exhausted. So we just take the whole kind of like family of what air conditioning or air vents look like. I can like mine that for like days or for years, right? Because they all look different. There's different like forms, there's different versions, and it all belonged to this particular family. So it was just a step up from that.
But why do you think you're interested in them? What is it about an air vent or a fan that makes you?
I just like this thing about it kind of sits in the middle between like the outside and the inside.
Right.
And also as it kind of filters a particular, it filters one space into another space. Mm. So there's almost like an osmosis that's kind of happening. Yeah. And I'm interested in that.
Well, it's a conduit.
It's absolutely. And I'm interested in kind of playing around in terms of like who allows what to come through and what pace, how much, who controls that. And I'm interested in that. But I'm also interested in that as being like these kind of architectural foundations that you see in buildings.
Yeah.
You know, that
peripheral, and you take for granted the whole time.
Totally, totally.
And those are things that are making up the society that we live in.
Yeah.
So the choice of how the building is built or the way it looks, all of that is kind of the structure that we're all...
Right.
And who made that decision as well.
So again, that could be an analogy for like all these other things that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
You know?
And something that I found incredibly powerful about this exhibition was the idea that the sound from those six speakers, even though it's coming through the vents and, you know, almost through the breeze that's hitting you occasionally, is actually being sent or directed to the empty space above the false ceiling that you put in the gallery. And that empty space was meant to kind of, or can be seen as almost like a space that we ignore and don't realize is there.
Yeah. People in the
and
margins.
Then it's this idea, exactly. Yeah. I found that so incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Like,
That was, so it's interesting to kind of hear you say it, because these are all things that I'm interested in.
You're happy about that.
Yeah, I'm happy about that. I'll take that. I'll take five of those. So almost in terms of like trying to, again, not show a figure or not kind of like, be figurative in like a traditional sense and think about how do you talk about certain bodies formally or through things that already exist in the world or things that are mass produced. And it was important that kind of like those moments that the fans were producing were directed. So that space was privileged, basically. A space that we necessarily can't get to, or a place that we wouldn't necessarily kind of like focus on is where that's kind of being directed. That's being kind of like privileged at that particular moment.
Right.
Is there anything up there that we don't... Did you plant anything up there?
No, there's nothing up there.
There's nothing up there.
There's absolutely nothing up there.
Okay.
And that's also important, you know, like this nothingness, but fullness as well. So it's full. So it becomes full or charged with this particular weight, this weight from this basically love song that's been slowed down.
And you said in this, you don't know if it's been made for the living or the dead. Now you're talking about conduit and the movement from one place to another. The fact it's been slowed down, it feels like it's from the past or it's someone's crossed over. And as it's moving through, it's like it's coming from the other world.
Yeah, I was going to say quite otherworldly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
otherworldly. It's like that's the dead coming into living, or the other way around. It's like...
But on like many levels, so like one thing that I maybe haven't been so explicit about, and I guess I don't really want to talk about that much, is that there is grief wrapped up in this work. There is an element of like dealing with grief and like how you process that, and wanting to kind of see a body that you love so much that is that you can no longer physically touch or engage with or caress or like be with how you used to be with them. So it's again, if we're kind of playing around with this kind of micro macro scale, on a very personal level, there's a conversation about grief. And then on a very macro level, there's a conversation about bodies that are in the world, but we just don't give them any kind of like, any kind of privilege or any kind of concern.
Well, people wouldn't grieve for them.
But the thing that you could talk about, this idea about live and dead, that people who are alive actually.
Yeah.
But we don't see them,
no.
you know, because
no.
we don't want to see them, like whether they're cleaners or whether like they're migrants. Is like there's a whole like roster that we can kind of go through in terms of people who actually you can say are like the living dead, basically. So in that sense, yes, I could say that I have made it for the dead, but that word again could be pulled apart in terms of actually it doesn't necessarily mean people who have like passed away. It could be people who are very, very much real
and
present right now, basically, who are presently absent. So I just had like, I launched a book yesterday. And one of the speakers was a person called Karen Soule, and she used this word like presently absent. And so that also I think is like is apt to kind of describe these bodies that are like in this liminal space.
I think you've really just explained what it was for me that's so powerful about this exhibition. It's this idea that I recognized or had empathy for some kind of hurting or pain or some, well, maybe it is this grief you speak of or whatever, but I didn't know it was necessarily grief even, but for me there was this charge.
Yeah, it's not an totally emotional, comfortable in there. It's not like it's a thoroughly enjoyable experience.
But that's also why I connected to it, because it has that soul and that depth of emotion, and there's something about slowing down that particular song. Now, I love that record anyway.
Right. And, well, let's hear your Miguel story.
Miguel's
then,
so
come
amazing.
On.
Well, no. I don't really have a story about him necessarily, but... I loved the version that he did of that song with Jessie Ware as well. They did like
I
a
haven't
duet
heard it.
Together, and it's so
how did you find it? Is it a friend
so,
played you?
Yeah, so a friend of mine, Tara Langford. We must have been having dinner at hers, and she played me this track, and I was just like, "What?" And so, but actually, the track that she played wasn't the original, so I hadn't heard the original of Miguel first. I came by it through the chopped and screwed version,
right?
So. So next morning, I what is that? And then since then, I've just been really obsessed with it. And as I do, I want to know more about it.
So hang on, Chopped and Screwed, is that the producers who did
So it's a
this
genre
is what
of
you've
music.
Called it? Okay.
No, so it's a genre of music where they play around with like stereo, they play around with like slowing the track down and playing around with like dropping like beats, basically. And it's come up like... in Texas, and it's a whole thing. It's a whole massive like genre. And so I started to kind of look into it and then talk to my brother about it, who was also very much interested. So it's like, so what I quite like also these kind of like these moments where you kind of like go around in yourself where it's like, okay, like, well, my brother's interested. I didn't even know he was interested until I kind of found this thing. And then starting to kind of explore it more and just kind of thinking about how it came about in that this was a genre of music that kind of like, which was like instigated to kind of like accompany a particular high, a high that you got off like a codeine mixture. And so you'd mix like codeine mixture or Calpol with like Kool-Aid, and that would make you really lethargic, basically. And that was what was practiced. And then this music came out of that. So I was just like, wow.
Really?
I was like, wow, that's really interesting.
So it's like a lifestyle music. Like
But I was just really kind of overwhelmed by... I was really interested in all of that as a way to kind of like, there's people who are already practicing this thing about slowing down. Like it's intention. There's an intentionality behind it that actually, and I'm like speculating here, but I like to think that this is what's going on, is that the world is like, it's too fast. Like there's too much drama going on.
Yeah.
I need some time out. And this is what I'm going to slow this right down. And so the music in a way was to kind of help stay the high or to kind of like elongate and sustain that particular feeling. And so I really liked that. I was really interested in that. I was really interested in the idea that I can talk about what they've done through like maybe the lens of like a ready-made. And also the fact that these weren't necessary bodies that I introduced into this canon that we're like interested in terms of an art canon. But they're on the periphery, but they're still doing this, which can be like really viewed and talked about in many different ways. I'm not necessarily interested in kind of saying, we need to raise this to this kind of like level, or we need to kind of validate. I'm very much interested in it being what it is over there. I'm not interested in kind of saying like, now we can kind of talk about this because it's equal to like what this person's doing here in the center. But I was just amazed, like, wow, like, that's really interesting for me, at least.
Well, in a really commercial sense, and referencing us, is that recently there's been a massive spike in audiobooks and podcasts because people are overly stimulated with Instagram, for example, that they want to be orally, A-U-R-A-L-L-Y, stimulated. And there's been a massive spike in it, which is, you know, in a commercial sense, what you're saying is that people want to slow down. People don't want to be like bombarded on a daily basis with images that they have to look at for 3 or 4 seconds and skim through. It's like we've got, it's amazing.
But also I think that's what's for me, quite interesting about sound, and that sound has, it has this ability to do something that what sight can't do, you know? Like, it really, for me, like, it really affects the body. So when I listen to, like, a track that I like, it, like, it surreptitiously, like, poaches me. Like, I'll be walking down the street and I might hear a song that I like, and then you start tapping, like, involuntary. Like, I'm interested in that. Like, how do I take that as a material? And that's kind of, like, what I'm trying to do. Like, how do I take this kind of, like, ability of like sound to do this thing to you. How do I make work out of that, or how do I utilize that?
Right.
And, you know, and then even on that alone, on by preview of that, what else do we not know that sound can do or achieve? Right. So it's
like an experiment.
Yeah, in lots of ways. Like it's always an attempt.
A social experiment.
It's always an attempt. It's always an attempt for
me. But also, I think the exhibition highlights this thing that you wouldn't pay attention to. So if you become aware of the idea of sound having an impact on your body. And even when the air comes out of the fan and hits your body, that even that sense, so it heightens
as well.
Yeah. And it heightens your senses on all levels in a way, in that slowness, which then you take away with you as being like this powerful experience.
Yeah.
And I was really interested in the idea as well that you spoke about how sound hadn't been almost co-opted or something by political organizations or governments or whatever
in the structures
in the way that imagery has.
Yeah.
And that was important to you.
Yeah, totally.
The hierarchy of sight. But sight has always been put first and sound second.
Yeah, but then also how sight or like the images or like photographic images have been used to kind of prove a particular supremacy over particular groups.
Yeah.
You know, like how, like there's a history of that in terms of like, this is an image of this kind of person and look how unamazing they are or how primitive they are in comparison to our white counterparts.
Yeah.
Or like there's a whole history of that. And I think for me, I can't not look at a photograph anymore and not see that history. Whereas I think sound, and I say sound and not necessarily music, doesn't, as far as I know, doesn't have that particular history, doesn't have that ancestral trait in terms of it's being used to kind of weaponize and kind of like, conjure up stereotypes about particular people, particular communities, and so on and so forth.
Do you think because that's the images that have got out, then it's ended up creating a stereotype?
No, so I'm kind of like, so the example that I use in this interview is, for instance, what's kind of allowed me to kind of think like this, and yes, I am speculating, is the idea that there's a document that has been used, or a document that has been used as evidence that details a particular heinous activity that's been visited on a particular body, on a black male. And that then document is then taken into a court of law, a particular, it was supposed to be democratic and supposed to be for everyone. But something happens when those two things meet, when this judicial system meets this photographic, where it's not read in the same way. Where it's like everyone who's outside of that will say, yes, this is something terrible. This is something that...
Right.
That, like, yeah, I can see with my own, like, something bad has happened. But the verdict that's returned is a not guilty verdict.
And you think that's to do with the medium of photography in some ways? It removes a certain...
Absolutely.
Whereas if it was a sound document...
Yeah, like, so it makes me feel like we need a different format. We need a different format for representation.
Got it.
So for instance, if... And also, the photograph is always something that's it's a retrospective act, so you're always looking at something that's happened. So it requires you, again, then that looking back into this particular ancestry of this document, right?
Mm.
So why not, like, think of a format that doesn't have all of that history?
Mm.
Like, and what does that look like? And it might not just be sound on its own. It might be sound in something that's more tactile. But I think the site has been overdetermined. It has been kind of weaponized. And it's partly like a lot of the problems that we have around normativity, or like what normativity is supposed to be, like what is right, what is the proper way of being.
Normativity, what does that mean?
In terms of like what is the right way or the agreed way to kind of live your life or be your life. Or
like a social norm,
right.
Like gender norms, all those
totally.
Kind of ideas.
And that in some ways you reference everything. When it comes to punctuation, when it comes to language, is that
absolutely.
You're like, this is, why is it that this is what we've been taught is the only way to...
Yeah.
Kind of express yourself through
totally.
Written word,
totally.
And you're trying to break that. It's
totally.
Like, why? Yeah.
So like, I'm against it all.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
So in every single way, like in my very approach is like, how do I position myself against all these things?
Yes.
Basically, because even in language, the grammar that we've given and the way that we've been asked to perform language contains some of these ancestral traits.
Yes.
In terms of like what's proper.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I love that. I just made my head.
A friend of mine, Ben, who I met in Margate, he sent me a New York Times article the other day from April, written by Sarah Lewis, and it was titled "The Racial Bias Built into Photography," and it's all about the idea of Kodak when it first got invented, how they only tested it on white skin, and it was about how photography as a medium was basically making white people look right in the picture, but no other skin colors, and it is the most fascinating article. And I've been reading more and more recently because we're doing this exhibition in Margate in September, which is all about the history of hosiery and women's tights in art, curated by Zoe Bordeaux. And there's all kinds of themes in this show, a lot to do with like women's rights and feminism, but a lot also to do with skin colour and racial politics and the idea of tights, for example, being the wrong colours, know, for people's skin. And there was that story recently of
that
guy.
Yeah, going to Marks and skin tone is like not really skin tone for me. You know,
yeah, exactly.
But again, that's on a very like micro level, and like, so what I'm talking about is like on a structural level.
Yes.
And I think that's and for me, that's where I'm invested in terms of like, yes, all of like tights and like skin, like you know, nudes, like tights is really important for me. Like opaque 100 denier, like when it comes to winter, but on a more like important level for me is like when it becomes structural, when it's like very much like the ingredient of certain things that we use and trade in every day, that just and just by kind of perpetuating the photograph, you're almost like maybe perpetuating these ideas unknowingly.
I know, but that's what I think was so interesting, is that something like photography, you know, more so than tights and even plasters or, you know, all these different things that are all completely messed up as well. But the thing about photography is it's become such a language, you know, probably more used in a way than spoken word these days for people to communicate. Yeah. And if that has this bias, you know, from its root, then it has to be readdressed and discussed and thought
Absolutely.
About. And I'd never thought about photography in that way before, which is kind of my own
plasters.
Ignorance.
You've just blown my mind.
Yeah, well,
a bit
there's an amazing story of a guy about a year ago who
I heard about this.
Yeah, he was in America, I think, and he'd bought plasters of his own skin tone and then bought them 6 months before, didn't think about it, was like, oh, that's cool. One day, cut his finger, went to the cupboard, put the plaster on his finger, burst into tears and had such a strong physical reaction to the idea that the skin colour matched his own skin colour on the plaster. And, you know, for a white person and a person who's been incredibly privileged, you know, when you put a plaster on, you don't think about it. You take it for granted.
Everything's taken for granted. So, you've got an obsession with Derry Girls.
I do.
Where did this obsession come from? Watching it, obviously.
It came from the director of Void Gallery, Mary Kremin, who basically the show is traveling to Void next year. And I went to do a site visit.
Where is that gallery?
Derry.
Derry, right.
And it was an amazing visit. And yeah, just it just showed up my own naivety about like what happened there and how much that's a recent history. And just made me realise actually when they're talking about Brexit and the backstop, it's like, right, now I get this. Now I understand what that means. And it's just like, okay, wow, like this is like literally just happening over here. So there was this mural of like the characters from the series. I was like, oh, who are they? And she's like, oh my goodness, you've got to watch Derry Girls. I was like, okay, cool, I'll go and watch Derry Girls. And I just literally blitzed through the first series. I'm saving the second series. And I just thought like, it's so incredible. It's just, and I just, yeah, I just think it's great. I think it's hilarious. But also more importantly, it does this thing where you have the trauma in terms of what's going on or what was happening in Derry at that time. And that isn't foregrounded. What's foregrounded mostly is just these individual lives, these kind of incidents, these tales, these kind of antics, these kind of just growing up as a teenager is what's kind of privileged. And I really like that. So it's almost like they're not defined by this bigger thing.
Yes.
Like that's not all they are. They're also, there are other things as well. So they can hold both of those realities simultaneously. They're not like, okay, oh, I'm really sorry that this has happened to you and this is the only way I can talk to you. And have to patronize you or like have to be concerned or be sorry for you.
It doesn't define their whole being.
Right? Like there are other things as well.
Well, I've got that as a soundbite. I'm in a show at the minute that's on TV. It's just finished called Years and Years. And like in the first episode, there's like a nuclear bomb's gone off.
Yeah.
But everyone still carries on. Life carries on.
Right.
Tragedies happen in the world. Horrific things are happening, but you still get up. You still laugh. You still eat. You still hang out with your friends.
This
you
is
still,
what I'm talking about.
You still make love. You still like
absolutely.
Go down the pub.
Like lots
you do,
of making lo- love. Like.
Loads of making love. And it's like, you do all that, but then all this terrible stuff is happening on the news, on TV. But that's the macro version. But the micro version is it's about love and it's about just exist. You don't stop. You don't roll over. Yeah.
And for me, that's really important. That's really important. That you know that it doesn't that you can still have joy.
Yeah.
That you can still have joy in those moments, basically. And certain kind of like framings of those situations will make you believe that these people don't have joy. And actually, and this is not to reduce. Or to kind of like be flippant about what's happened or what happens to people in general, but it's kind of say like they're more than that, you know, they're more than this one thing that's just kind of happened to them.
And actually, that's another theme that I have really been thinking about. When I woke up this morning and I knew we were going to talk to you, the thing that kept coming into my head was this word "whole," which is such a weird thing to think as a word, like whole, like whole.
Yeah.
But this idea of being a whole person,
yeah,
and that you, when you're making your work, you don't just want to bring one part of yourself to your work. You want to try and bring the whole of yourself or represent the whole of all people in a way.
Yeah.
But I liked this idea that as an artist, you're not just, today I'm going to be the artist. You know, it depends on what you ate at breakfast, how you feel, all these things. And that's the whole experience. And that's what I think the exhibition is this whole environment. It's like a complete environment.
And you felt pressured before to be, parenthesis, the artist?
No, not so much pressure to be the artist. Like, I'm like, I'm that last. Like, you know, I'm not, I don't even use that to kind of make work. That's not where the work comes from. Like, I'm not invested in that as a title. In a way, I've used that quite flippantly. But just in terms of like, and I guess maybe coming from teaching and being in a role that I take very seriously in terms of like having to privilege or facilitate other people's visual language or other people's various different languages, just how there becomes a standard and how in the beginning I was also exacting that standard or asking them to kind of like perform that standard and just realize actually that this is an issue and that this isn't conducive or appropriate for all of these people to kind of take up this particular way of being. Yeah. Like, it's wrong. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And so I just started to kind of like to think, like, how do I then, like, and I talked to like a good friend, Taylor, about this. How do you become your default person without all of these external influences, whether that's from family, friends, culture? How do you be yourself? Like, what does that look like? And that's kind of where that's come from.
How do you do it then?
I have no idea.
You don't
be an artist.
A journey, yeah. But also as a human being, if the moment you sort of leave the home and go to school, for example, this is a really basic example, but once you go to school, I remember a lot of my friends who have had kids and they send their kids off to school, one of the reasons they get so upset is the idea that they're suddenly entering society and that they're going to have all these rules and regulations and strict things put on them, which might then suppress who they are.
Right.
And then that, as you grow up and you go through all these different systems, or whatever happens in your life, different systems will happen, you know, will be put upon you, different forces will be put upon you, whether it's, you know, all different things can happen to you, but it's how you then respond to those. But then I think as you get older, you have to find who you are again somehow through all of that.
Yeah. I think the educational system has a lot to answer for with that, because I feel like when I left high school, I should have probably gone into therapy after leaving high school, because I didn't have a fucking clue who I was. I was like pretending to be one thing.
Yeah.
My voice hadn't broken at some point. And I pretended I had a deeper voice.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I didn't get pubes till I was about 15, a very late developer, but I pretend, so you don't need to too much information. But all that sort of stuff can screw your head up as a kid, and pretending, trying to be someone you're actually not in your head, but outwardly to survive school, And then you leave and then you're out in the real world and you're like, I don't know who the fuck I am.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think they're all forces that have been put upon you, which you don't, it's not like you can suddenly go, this is how I'm whole. You know, this is how I'm going to be the full me, the default me. You just have to try and find that person as much you can. And that's going to be a lifetime journey, I think.
And it becomes a policy. And one thing that I'm really interested in, which I spoke about a lot recently, just the idea of policy, is essentially just someone saying, oh, this worked for me in this particular way. Like, I got to the door by making this amount of steps, so I'm going to make sure that everyone makes those amount of steps to get to the door. And then it's rolled out. And I was like, what if your legs are short? What if you're like you're size 7 or size 9? Like, you're going to take different amount of steps. And so I'm interested in the kind of like thing, okay, there doesn't have to just be one way. And this then also comes under the rubric of like professionalism or professionalizing and what that looks like. Like, what does it mean to be a professional? You know, how does it mean? Like, how are you supposed to attend an interview? Mm. How you're supposed to kind of stand up and like talk and present yourself? Like, all of that comes under this rubric of professionalization, which I think is nefarious to say the least, you know, because that also... that's also becomes like a stencil, like a cookie cut in terms of like all this other stuff that you are, all this excess. Like, I love lamb with like a nice piece of fat on the side of it. Don't take that fat off for me, right?
Yeah.
But it's asking you to take that fat, which I think is really important for like lamb, right? And so you're given this piece of meat without end, which is just dry, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Because someone's decided that we don't like fat.
Basically.
Umbrella of humans don't like the fat on the lamb, so we're going to take that off.
Totally. Give me my fat.
And also, it's a lifelong exploration for you, this thing.
Yeah, totally. And that's what I mean. It's not... And also, all these things I'm trying to kind of maybe think about in the work is happening in real time with me. So it's not... I'm also trying to do this, like, in real time, you know, like, for myself. I'm also trying to... Hence the titles, like, okay, what would language look like? What would a grammar look like that actually carries the way that I speak or carries the way that I want to...
to your rhythm.
Basically, you know. So this is... So it's not like I have an answer... You said before, like, it's an experiment. Like, yes, it's an attempt. Everything's an absolute attempt. Like, okay, maybe didn't get it right last time, but I'm going to try and do it this time.
I think for me as well, the idea of trying to get the whole self, you know, and not to reduce who you are or suppress certain parts of your personality in order to become professional or to be acceptable within society, those other parts of yourself that make up the whole can actually end up bringing greatness to society anyway.
Yeah,
and that's
right?
The whole point. And it's the same with feminism. You know, if you want equality of the sexes and equal rights for all people, male or female or transgender or whatever.
Yeah.
Equal pay. Yeah.
Equal pay. Yeah. Yeah, but no, but equality generally.
Yeah.
Out of that equality, the other gender will be better off anyway, or the rest of society will succeed better because you're helping each other.
Right.
Because it's joint strengths that are going to make the world a better place. And that's actually what I think it's that the show in a way kind of represents as well. Not necessarily just those topics, but the idea of somehow if we come together, you know, we'll actually be better, or the world would be better.
And that's and one way to kind of maybe look at that is like all of these things are like there's like the show is like I'm interested in like fragmentation. So the fans are one thing, like the ceiling's another thing, the frames are another thing, the lights are another thing, and they're not necessarily cohesive, but actually they work together. Mm. And that's what I'm interested in. So it's not this thing about I'm not interested in like cohesiveness. So even like the other thing we didn't talk about is that there's an extra distortion with the sound because of the blades of the fans.
Yes.
So again, it's not about being able to kind of have things in like HD or like high fidelity. I'm not interested in that. Like I'm interested in when it kind of gets a bit gritty and like I'm interested when it becomes fragmented. So it's like, so if you were to listen to the sound outside of the fans, they sound much different to what they do with the inside of the fans.
Right.
So again, just this constant thing like, okay, like just training or drawing on you to kind of like wait a bit more to kind of like think through like what's going on here, you know? So yeah, I'm not interested in cohesiveness.
And it's disrupting the way we're hearing the audio as well. So it's, it's interesting.
I love it. Well, hope comes up. And aspiration.
Yeah.
You're talking about the frames.
Yeah.
There's an aspirational feel because it's a very low quality kind of chipboard wood that you use. And then you frame it in these beautiful, expensive framings, which aspires the chipboard up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing, the same thing with hope. It's like always trying to be better yourself and be presentable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess like, and that's more of like a, I'd say a tight work in terms of like there is like it is quite formulaic in that. For me, I think about language with those works in that for me, language will always be the language that I'm kind of like talking to you now. Like for me, there'll always be a dissonance between this feeling that I have. Like I have this feeling, there's this desire, and I want to try and communicate it to you.
Mm-hmm.
But through the apparatus that I've been given, the apparatus that I've been given to kind of communicate that to you, there's always going to be some fallout. You know, there's always going to be something that's not delivered in the way that I'm feeling it. You know, that...
Is that because there's only certain words you can use in your vocabulary? Like the no, word but just love, in general, for example.
Yes, yeah.
My feeling of love is different to your feeling of love, but the only word we've got to describe it is love.
Yeah, basically. So it can be like, you know, like my love for like...
lamb with that.
For lamb, right?
Yeah.
It's completely different to my love for like Mahalia Jackson. It's completely different to my love for like your dogs in this place.
Yeah.
But I've just been forced to use this one word.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's more of like a gamut. Like there's more of like,
yeah.
Like it's more expansive in terms of what each and one of those loves are. They're all different.
Yeah.
But I've just been given one bloody word to use.
I know. It's like you need a longer word for love sometimes.
I need a much longer word for
and
love.
You need a lot of punctuation
in it.
Yeah,
and a lot of fat.
A lot of fat on that love. Yeah.
When I was about 14.
And some rosemary.
When I was about 14, I remember hearing one of the Björk songs and it said like, words are useless. How can they explain how I feel? And it was the first time that I'd even... like thought about that because at the age of 14 you just accept or personally not
take
everyone
everything
obviously
for granted.
But I had just thought words are words and that's what they are, and I remember her singing that and it really cutting me, and I was really angry about it, and I suddenly felt like my brother had just died, and I remember thinking like I'm feeling all these emotions, which actually a lot of it was probably anger, which I didn't recognize at the time.
Yeah.
But like,
I've
words,
only got this vocabulary to describe.
None of those words did.
Yeah,
enough.
Exactly
enough.
They're not long enough. They're not textual enough. They're not fleshy enough. They're not.
But someone somewhere has decided that then words are the words that you can use, and that's it.
Right, and that actually is something that has really happened in language. Like under like again the colonial rubric, people have gone in and like robbed people of their language. So again, so it is a real thing. So I'm speculating it in the abstract, but actually it's a real thing where there's a history of that that's happened.
Yes.
Basically. So yes, so people have like the way that they've been communicated has been replaced with someone saying, actually, you know what? This is how you're gonna love today, or this is how you're gonna like talk to like a lemon drizzle cake today. This is how you're gonna.
So what do we do, Emma?
I don't know. Like it's all an attempt. Like let's attempt to try and do it.
I think one of the most important things is to talk to each other, which is what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And also for you to continue your journey making your work, because I feel like you've created your own language and are still creating your own language.
Yeah.
And the more you do that and the more exhibitions
you have...
And you
do it through sound. It's like you're communicating
and also
through sound.
Through sculpture and you know all the different mediums, because even the lights in the show, I loved that idea that it was linked to your family and you know, the kind of personal references within those. But I feel like the more you continue to do your exhibitions over the next, you know, however many years...
150
years, hopefully. but that language, in a way, will become more understood in its own right, which will then continue,
We're very excited about you.
Can I quickly just ask one thing that I really
wanted to
bring
up? I also need the Miguel story, because people are going to be very angry that I cut you off earlier because you didn't finish it.
There isn't really that big a story.
What was it then? What was the link?
No, I just love the record. The other thing I wanted to quickly mention was this idea that I found a sense of mystery in... when approaching your exhibition, that it was all quite mysterious.
Yeah.
And that in itself was quite a shock to me, because these days there isn't much mystery. I feel like a lot of things are just brought up to you on a plate.
Yeah.
And I heard an interview the other day with Lena Dunham, the actress on TV show Girls, and she was interviewing a singer called Sia. And Sia said part of the reason she thinks she's been so successful, or part of the reason it's worked, is because she had mystery, because she didn't show her face.
Yeah.
And she decided to withdraw. The bigger she was becoming, the more she withdrew as a face and as a person.
Mm.
And she didn't want her body to be seen.
Yeah.
And she's just a blonde wig, basically.
Yeah.
It's this wig. And that became the thing. And I love that idea of mystery. And is that a deliberate thing for you or not?
No, actually. Like, I haven't set about, like, I'm going to try and create mystery in that. Like, no, that hasn't actually been a thought at all.
Right.
There has been some decisions that have been made in terms of, like, I'm definitely not going to give this away so easily.
Yeah.
Right? So that is an intentionality in terms of, I want people to work for this. And I will reward you if you stay with this. So, for instance, if you go to another show of mine, I'm hoping that, by following me, other things will start to kind of reveal themselves, right?
Yeah.
One of the main decisions is not to kind of put a figure in place, Like that's something where in the past I have, but now I'm just like, actually, I don't want to be figurative in that kind of traditional way. So that has been a decision, but not to like, oh, because I want to create mystery, but it's, oh, because I just don't want this body to be consumed in a really kind of like uncomfortable way. And that's not necessarily my body, but any kind of body.
Interesting.
Is it because if you put a figure in there, then people automatically project onto it what the work is?
Yeah, but then also, like, if I'm going to put a figure in there, it's going to be a figure that looks like me, right? And I just feel like, actually, I don't think it's safe to kind of do that. Like, there's some bodies, that are, again, coming back to, like, what bodies have been privileged and then how some bodies are kind of, like, have been consumed in particular ways. I'm not trying to perpetuate that at all,
right. Basically.
So until those conditions are right, until that equality comes, which I'm not sure when, I'm not going to do that, basically.
Great.
You're not going to have that from me.
Yeah.
So that's something that has been, is a decision that I've made,
yeah.
But not to be mysterious.
Yeah, not to create mystery. Yeah,
because
no,
I just think like I don't want to perpetuate a particular kind of violence.
Yes. So that's a rule you kind of set for yourself,
yes,
in your art.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you have many other rules?
I don't know yet. Maybe, but not like so clear as that one.
Okay.
Basically.
Can I ask you another thing?
Yes.
You wrote a letter to Freeze, which I think it was just before your show. Or it's a text with you with a diagram,
yeah,
of a kind of, isn't it?
So yeah, it was for their 200 like edition.
200th edition.
Yeah, basically they asked a couple of like people to kind of contribute a text. So yeah,
yeah, I loved that text. And the bit, because to me it was very poetic.
Yeah.
But also I loved that it was almost so personal and intimate at the same time, but you don't really get the full story.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about Dark Child's music and
Dark Child.
Trying to be like Keisha, who, yeah, I assume was from Sugar Babes. I wasn't sure.
No,
Keisha from Total
is an R&B group that was managed by Puff Daddy, who now goes by P Diddy.
Okay.
And yeah, they were like a group that I loved, and I loved Keisha, basically.
Because I loved Keisha from Sugar Babes, which is why I thought
Keisha
it was
Keisha was also great, though. Sugar Babes was also great.
I quite like Keisha.
I loved them.
Sugar Babes were also great. Like, let's have a moment for Sugar Babes.
I kind of loved them, actually, because I felt like
I'm not even, like, lying. Like, let's
do it.
I like Siobhan, like, the original members.
Oh, yeah,
Siobhan was so great. It
I
is
just
so great.
Out there.
Yeah, I liked her so much.
But they did all get back together, the original three, didn't they? For, I think, about
maybe
3 months.
For like, yeah, a week, yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved this idea of these kind of, and a bit like with the glass, the hand-blown glass that's in your exhibition relating to, you know, socializing
decanters
and,
yeah,
yep, drinking and all those things. But I loved these personal elements, and they're only like tiny sentences, yeah, here and there, which then become part of this bigger picture, which, yeah, I just wanted to mention that because you can Google it and go to Freeze and you can see this wonderful,
yeah,
it's only very short, but I found it really touching as well.
Thank you.
So, every guest that comes on Talk Art, mm-hmm, we ask two questions to.
They're really tough.
Okay.
One is, if you could go to any museum or house or anywhere and take an artwork, do like an art heist and take something home
goodness.
With you, and it could be absolutely anything
like
that's inspired you
artwork,
or
yeah,
like a touchstone artwork,
oh,
that you could
goodness.
Bring home or whatever, what would you do? What would be your art heist?
Oh, my goodness.
Now, who are your influences? Who do you look at historically in the lineage of art history?
Okay, let me think. That's hard. Like, there's lots of people that maybe I'm interested in, but not like that are not like big hitters for me. Like, I don't have that, but I may be interested in like. Well, actually, so one of the things that I guess I do is, I'm interested in like moments that kind of like draw like a type of arousal in particular, like in a particular art economy, and maybe just using that. But using it to go elsewhere. So one of a term that's kind of been used to kind of describe my work is minimalism, but I'm not necessarily interested in that. I want minimalism with like a nice sloppy wet kiss. Like I want it with feeling. So I'll take all these things that people may be used to that it does, but like do these other things, like imbue it with something like cognac or, you know, rub all these other things in. So there is an awareness of that. And maybe that was like, that study came from in terms of like, maybe any insecurities that I have, like moving from design to art and like, okay, what is this thing? And like, who do I need to kind of be aware of? Or like, what is this history and everything? And actually, I'm not really so respectful of this history. I'm not like, I don't hold it so sacrosanct, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I guess
it's like minimalism that you imbue with a spell.
Yeah.
With magic.
Yeah. like a love triangle between like romanticism, minimalism, and conceptualism.
Great.
That would be like,
hot. That is a hot triangle.
I know, right? And then take that to anywhere along the tropic of Cancer, and it's even better.
Wow.
Lots of palm trees, blue skies, and heats. Like, awesome. That's my setup. But to answer your question, oh my goodness, I'm just trying to think. Okay, maybe I can't answer that, but a show that I really liked at the moment was Civic Duty at Cell Project Space. Mm-hmm. So it had Adrian Piper.
I love her.
Right?
Was it the dancing video where she's dancing
no,
to
so
Berlin?
No, so she made...
Or?
No, but that's a great video
love
as well. Like, if you can
so
put dancing
much
in artwork, then, like, I'm all over
that. Oh, you can have that. You can have
so maybe
Piper
there. So maybe,
around,
the, maybe there is one. So Adrian Piper.
Yeah.
But also, I like Adrian Piper in the sense that you can't categorize her practice,
no,
right? So there's this writing, there's this theory, there's like these photographs, there's these texts, there's these kind of like installations, there are these experiences. I do like, so there's a fragmentation, but it does, there is an order to it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, let's go with Adrian Piper.
Amazing.
Awesome.
And the next question we ask everyone is, what is your favorite color?
What is my favorite color? So in screen printing, it would be like fluorescent pink.
Really?
Yeah, totally. I love a fluorescent pink.
So have you showed these screen prints anywhere?
I have, yeah. I have in the past. But I am actually working on a set of screen prints at the moment for like cool a show that's coming up.
I want to wow see that in fluorescent pink.
There'll be some fluorescent pink, yes.
And why fluorescent pink?
Because it's just a nice hot colour.
It is a hot colour.
It reminds me of Miami Vice a bit.
Does it?
Yeah.
Love that.
Don Johnson,
I know,
sort
right
of thing. Like, yeah.
It's like
Hawaiian shirts and everything.
And also, but like Michael Mann films, like the way he uses light, that kind of like Twilight, what Twilight does to certain like colours, I quite like that. And that fluorescent pink does that for
what
me.
What scale are these screen prints?
Like, they're massive. I like scale, I like size.
Mm.
So they're maybe like 1 meter by 2 meters.
Great. I want to see these.
I'm really liking this idea of fluorescent pink as well, because I feel like certain colours can kind of create an emotion or positive energy.
Yeah.
And I think that is a colour that would do that, isn't it? It's
yeah
like it kind of invigorates
jolt,
you.
Yeah.
And also we were told by Michael Craig Martin ages ago that pink and magenta can actually look good with every other colour as well.
Yeah.
Apparently it makes other colours look good.
Right, it makes them pop.
Yeah.
So like a lot of my prints are like maybe printed onto like black. So black is the background
yeah
and then like these like fluorescent colours sit on top of them. Or some of them are more gestural as well. So there's a range of like the prints that I do basically.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking.
No,
about
thank
you
for having
you live
me
in London, right?
No, at the moment I live in Amsterdam. Like, I'm literally going back to Amsterdam today.
Are you?
I am.
And what is it you do in Amsterdam?
You're at the Rijks Academy now.
I'm at the Rijks Academy doing a 2-year residency. So I started that in January. So I just literally moved over in January.
And what are you, how are you finding Amsterdam?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's been good to be there and work on this show, like, and be like away from London.
Yeah.
It's a completely different vibe. But no, I really enjoy it. Like I love heat. I'm allergic to the cold.
Yeah.
Like I just don't do cold weather at all.
Yeah.
So now it's getting warmer and it's like, it's as a city, it's starting to kind of open up a bit more to me. It's like doing things like cycling along the canals
yeah,
and
lovely
like buying tulips and you know.
Yeah.
But no, I really like it. I really enjoy it.
Rotterdam's interesting as well.
I do like Rotterdam actually. I prefer Rotterdam than Amsterdam.
I really like Rotterdam as well.
It's a bit more like,
yeah, and there's really great artists there, and there's a few good art spaces and things.
Yeah,
yeah, it's really it's a great.
Yeah,
place.
I like Rotterdam's vibe.
Yeah,
over Amsterdam, but I do like
and
Amsterdam.
Outside of Amsterdam, you're London girl.
I'm a London girl, born and bred. Yes, Southwest Saint Reefham, or Streatham.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to the Lanes.
They all listen to Talk Art.
They do well. Yeah, I'll tell them to now. Basically.
Dude.
Good one.
Amazing.
Well, thank you so much for
no,
coming
not
on
at all. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Phenomenal.
Hopefully we'll get to have another conversation in the future.
Yeah.
I'm really liking the idea now of like doing more than one interview so you could like do an interview in a year's time.
Yeah.
But we have to have lamb on the table.
Huh?
Yeah. We have to have lamb.
Well, I'm pescatarian.
Yeah.
You two can
oh,
have
oh,
the
wow.
lamb.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Well,
we can
just have, yeah, literally.
I will eat the rosemary sprigs.
Okay, all right.
And for everyone who wants to see images of the artworks we've spoken about today, you can see it at our Instagram, @talkart, and we'll be back very soon. Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diament and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram @talkart, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts.